The Red Robin podcast is powered by Budget Tyres Auto Centre, the only car specialist trusted by supporters, players and club officials. Head down to Leeds Road and check them out for all your motoring needs. After a much-needed victory over playoff rivals, Leigh, the Robins face league leaders Castellan Dragons as Perpignan Playboys travel to East Hull for Rivals Round. We have all the latest squad news ahead of Friday's game in HU9 with podcast regulars Graham Turner and Steve Till joining me to give their two pennies worth, with the lads reflect on the Robins' scintillating victory over Challenge Cup winners Leigh Leopards. Plus, we discuss Jack Walker's departure and we share our views on match official abuse. All this and more on this week's Red Robin Podcast Weekly. Gentlemen, it's a great pleasure once again to be speaking to you on the Red Robin Podcast Weekly. Graham, the life of Robins fans never easy, is it? And there's been so much going on. But we played the Leigh Leopards on Friday night and I tweeted straight after we beat them 52 points to 10. And it felt like that was the kind of performance and that was the kind of scoreline and that was the kind of victory that we needed, especially as we faced them the fourth time this season. And, of course, we saw what happened at Wembley. I just felt that is the victory we needed rather than a close four, 18 points to 19. We needed that big scoreline to maybe put a few things to bed.
Yeah, evening, Jono. Evening, everybody. I think you're right that the level of performance was excellent first and foremost, and the result took care of itself. But you're right, I think after three defeats on the bounce to them, there's almost they almost had a bit of a hoodoo over us if they'd have got one over us again there. Playing them four times, not coming out on top, albeit in a couple of close games previously, we might have started to let that get into our head. So I think from putting the experience of Wembley behind us and putting that experience to bed was a much needed, well earned, comprehensive victory for us. And I think the pleasing thing for everybody to watch as a Rovers fan was the style of play that we employed on Friday evening as well. You know, casting your mind back a couple of weeks to Wembley, we didn't have much of that creativity that was on show on Friday evening. So that was pleasing to see that we'd adopted the different style to try and beat them and almost beat Leigh at their own game, effect of getting the ball wide early, getting it in the outside back's hands, making easy meters upfield and ultimately being in the red zone more often than not and punishing them, which is something that was completely missing 2 weeks earlier.
Yeah, and Steve, I mean, Graham's already alluded to it. Let's be honest, in the Challenge Cup final, their forwards outplayed our forwards. And on Friday night, our forwards outplayed theirs. You only have to look at Robbie Mullen making 38 metres and some of the other stats that come out of that. But at the end of the day, Steve, you can't devalue Rovers' performance based on Leigh because the Robins showed up, didn't they? They wanted the win and we saw how clear that, Sean Kennedy-Dowell's boys and the rest, they really wanted that victory on Friday night to probably lay down a marker for the push to the playoffs.
Yeah, hi guys. I think the biggest stat of all, and I've no doubt you'll go into stats, General, but the biggest stat of all was 14 consecutive sets, which was broken, by the way, when Ryan Hall knocked on in a tackle. But 14 consecutive sets, that was remarkable. And we swung the ball up. I think at Wembley we made mistakes early on, and that set us back a bit. But it was a different Rovers altogether. And I think there were two key changes that caused that, which we might go into later. One, Mikey Lewis going into the half backs, and the other one, Matt Parcell starting at the beginning. I think there were two key changes. In positional changes, which allowed us to get on the front foot almost straight away.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Graham, you can't brush over it, can you? Them changes Steve just mentioned are pivotal changes, aren't they? And I've seen a lot of Rove supporters, probably quite rightly, suggest that Mikey Lewis, it should be nailed on fullback for the end of the season and possibly for next season.
he moved back into the halves for this game against Lee. And then we also saw Matty Parcell starting. And the combination of them two and the energy that they bring, the creativity that they bring, the spark, you know, ultimately didn't have an answer for that.
Yeah, absolutely. The sort of dynamics that both of those changes brought sped us up a lot, gave us a lot more creativity, I thought, early doors, which was really, really important. The other bit behind that was, I think, Walker as well coming into that position at fullback, give us that solidity. He looked a threat with ball in hand, and I know we're going to touch on Jack Walker later on, but I thought that balance that the whole starting 13 had and ultimately with the changes give us a good balance across the field. But you know, for those fans that were lauding Mikey, who did a great job at fullback, by the way, I think it's evident now that we've seen him play at fullback, but his best position for us is in that role in the middle of the park, where he can be unpredictable, where he can on the drop above a shoulder make the line, he can make those offloads, which is something at probably fullback he doesn't get the opportunity to do as much in terms of that creativity, that off the cuff perspective. So I think, you know, as fans, again, I was one of those who said, yeah, he's done really, really well at fullback and could see him cementing that place in there, but actually now reverting back to that seven with a bit of fire in his belly to perform in that role. I think we've all seen the Mikey Lewis we know, we love, we expect to play like that in that seven. And again, just as fans, it wasn't too long ago that the young kid Zenon from Catalans came over, had a wow of a game in his debut, and everybody's saying give him a 3-year contract. And you know, all of a sudden we sort of forgot all about him, and we don't want to be issuing 3-year contracts to that type of player at this stage. So I think as fans, we've got to keep our long-term view on things. And for me, Mikey's long-term position is in that halves. Matt Parcell, we know what qualities Matt has, and more often than not brings them. But it was a subtle change that made between Litton and Parcell around swapping that start and interchange position, which again on Friday evening worked really, really well. On another given occasion, other teams might work that out and counter that, so it might have to revert back, you know, to keep people guessing perhaps. But I thought there was a better balance to the squad, and the changes that you've highlighted there certainly brought a different dynamic in our attacking play.
Yeah, and Steve, I'll ask you, I mean, there's no doubt that Mikey Lewis can play fullback, and he can play it very well. But what I think is that he spends so much time under the high ball, running the ball out from defence. He's almost wasted in that area there when he can play specialist fullback. And we saw against Lee, when he's up at the line, when he's close to play, you know, he's able to have the ball in hand more times, more than, you know, in attacking positions. That's where he thrives for me. And we've got other players who could play the fullback role, you know, as good as what he can. But we don't have players who can play the role in six or seven as well as Mikey Lewis can play it.
Yeah, I think the key attribute he's got as a halfback is that initial dynamic speed straight away, instant, 20 metres, boom, he could be gone. Whereas when he's taking high balls or he's taking balls at fullback at distance, he can't produce that dynamic speed because he's either taking the ball and getting tackled, or if he has got some space to run, he's using up energy in that, say he had to run those 20 metres to clear the line, he then immediately meets the tackler, and he hasn't got that dynamic speed's gone. You know, I used to have shares in a racehorse, and you could hit that racehorse once and it would go bang. You know, you get a run out of it, change gear. That was its only run. You know, you hit it again and it just carried on one pace. And I'm not saying Mikey Lewis carries on one pace, but what I am saying is that initial burst of energy, that initial burst of speed and of thought, you know, he spots the gap. Remember that, I think it was Wigan won it in the semi-final where he cleared his line. He did something that no one else could have done as far as I'm concerned. He took the ball behind his own line. Everybody thinks, so it's going to be a goal line drop out. What did he do? He put that burst on in the narrowest of gaps, cleared the line and went about 20 metres. That was fantastic. And that's Mikey Lewis. So to me, he's wasted at fullback. You know, like you said, there are others who can play fullback. And of course, next season, we've got a choice of two in Echo and Evels. So keep him at halfback. And again, Wembley, let's go back to Wembley. Rowan Milnes didn't have that dynamism. And I like Rowan Milnes, but he didn't have that dynamism. And that might have been the difference at Wembley.
Yeah, I mean, Bazza on YouTube, he's put, evening, guys. I know you like Milnes, Jono, but how much more lethal with Mikey in the halves with Brad? I mean, you can't argue with it, can you? They seem to be the perfect foil, Graham. Brad Schneider, he's a tough guy. He likes to do the short stuff, the easy stuff, but it's the easy stuff that is sometimes the hardest plays to make. And then when you've got someone like Mikey who's creative, wants to run at pace and do the dynamic stuff, they did seem well suited, didn't they? And you know, you can't argue with the fact that Rowan Milnes ultimately was dropped from the side. And when you see a performance like that against Lee, you know, Willie Peters probably made the right call.
Absolutely, 100% made the right call. And I think it goes back to that web balance that I highlighted earlier on around Schneider and Lewis. And I think one of the key changes that they both made in terms of our attacking play was they actually engaged with the defensive line before deciding on their play rather than being predictable and making a pass or a kick from 5 metres away from it. They actually made the defenders think, which again created opportunities. You look at the ball that Mikey played out for Ryan Hall in the corner. That was all because he engaged the line, drew in the defender, nice flick pass. And that was something that different that we I don't think we get that from Milnes. It's more of a composed, steady Eddie type performance in terms of ball control. I don't think you get that dynamism from Milnes that you get from those. And I think, again, just a nod to Brad Schneider as well. I thought personally that was his best game that he'd had for Rovers as a complete 80-minute performance. I know he's done the one-offs in terms of the drop goals, to win against Leeds to get us through the semi-final, etc. But I think as a complete performance from him, that was the best game I've seen him in a red and white shirt, and that was probably more akin to what we expected from him when he was sort of brought over. But with Mikey as well as his able assistant there, the pair of them, I would say, caused havoc all night for Lee's defence.
Yeah, and he added 16 points to the scoreline as well with Absolutely. His
kicking. Yeah. Can I just say that another aspect of it is Mikey Lewis was playing on the left side. I think that's his preferred side.
Yeah, well, that is normally, and we're going to come on to it, that is normally Jordan Abdul's side. And yeah. It's interesting to see the team of the week because Sean Kennedy-Dowell, Ryan Hall were both in there the first time that they have featured together. But they seem to thrive off the balls played out. And one player, especially in the first, I think, three tries, was probably gone underlooked, is Elliot Minchella, the role he plays and being able to pass the ball on. And you know, we might as well speak about Jordan Abdul now because by all accounts, he's going to be fit for our next game. And I've seen many supporters trying to shoehorn him into the side in terms of where he should play at 13, where he should go into the halves. And for me, he doesn't necessarily deserve the right to go straight back into that side. Because when you see players like Minchella performing at 13, when you see our halfbacks performing like they did against Lee, I don't see what Jordan Abdul could add to that more than what they're doing already. And Steve, where do you think Jordan Abdul, do you think he should come straight back into the side if he's fit, or do you think it's time for him to maybe bide his time and earn his place?
He's got to earn his place. He's a different player. Schneider does the Jordan Abdul role with a bit more speed for me. It's tough on Abdul, but you know, you've got to earn your place. And if we have got a winning combination, which we did have last week, we'll see again tomorrow, because looking at the Catalan squad, they've got their spine in place in the way that Lee had their spine in place last week. And we normalised them as Wigan did against Catalan last week. I don't think we should change a winning team, and we haven't changed the winning squad. The squad looks as though the squad he's picked looks as though we'll have the same team out next week. And Jordan Abdul's got to take. I would see Jordan Abdul perhaps coming back against Wakefield, possibly Salford, but. It obviously injuries make a big difference, and if we get any knocks, it could well be that he does come back, or he might get a bench place. But I don't even see him getting a bench place for me at the moment. I really don't. And yeah, I like Jordan Abdul. He's only played about 25 games for Rovers. You know.
Yeah, it's crazy when you look at how many games he's played. It's crazy, really, in terms of how long he spent at the club. I mean, Graham, the one thing you would say is Elliot Minchella is not normally an 80-minute player. So there's an opportunity there, isn't there, to fit Abdul in, because many supporters are calling for Abdul to feature at loose forward if he can't play in the halves. Or many people are saying, actually, Abdul's position is at 13. What you would say is, though, is normally Minchella comes off when we're trying to either close the game out or chase it. Abdul's not necessarily the player you'd automatically think to then slot into there if you had to front up in defence. You'd only expect him to come in there maybe if he was chasing the game and you wanted an extra, an extra halfback, an extra creative player to try and win the game. But I don't see it. I'm not a fan of Abdul at 13. I just don't see. I think people are maybe a bit lazy in their assumption in that because Jordan Abdul's a bigger build than most halfbacks, that the natural assumption is to move him to 13. But I think that's a bit of a lazy assumption for me.
Yeah, I think on current form, I completely agree with Steve there in terms of you've got to earn your place in the squad and your shirt for starting and on the bench. And I think that's been quite evident from Willie Peters all season about earning the right to wear the shirt on match day. So completely agree with that. And, you know, Baz has made the point, who gets dropped when Abdul is back? I don't know if anybody gets dropped when Abdul is back. Abdul's got to earn the right to get into the squad, first of all, for match day, and then earn the right. And he'll only do that by, you know, completing all the fitness and medical protocols that he needs to do, showing up in training week in, week out at the intensity that's needed. And then, like you, I probably see him as contributing from the bench, if anywhere, in those, you know, just to build up his minutes again, rather than expecting at this important stage of the season to come in from the cold and, you know, hit the ground at the intensity we need for playoff, you know, to reach the playoffs and hopefully be in the playoffs. I think you've got to build him up gradually to do that. And whether we've got the injuries or suspensions to create gaps in the squad at the minute, yeah, unless either of those two scenarios plays out or somebody drops completely out of form, I can't see him forcing his way over and above Minchella at 13. That is a shoo-in for me, is Elliot. And, you know, Baz has suggested second row for Lynette, but again, I'm not sure that's you sort of create a situation where you can accommodate him rather than keep the round pegs in the round hole. So, a tricky one, but I don't think there's a huge justification in changing the winning team at the minute. That if the performance on Friday night is completely different to what we saw last week, then yeah, there's going to be arguments to be made around. How do they shake the squad up? How do they freshen it up to keep everybody on the toes? But as I say, all season long, we've seen Peters make those calls that either keep people in or that drop people who aren't performing. So he's always been on merit that you earn that shirt. And that for me has got to be the fundamental basis of Abdul coming back into the squad.
Yeah, and Steve, I mean, I was going to... I was going to say, Steve, how refreshing as well was it to see our pack, who have been almost ever-present all season, which is almost unheard of for Hull Kingston Rovers, you know, apart from Jesse Sue, of course, who suffered that injury earlier on in the season. But the forwards pretty much laid the platform down, didn't they, down the middle by beating Lee up and George King, Sam Luckley. I mean, they made over 100 metres each. Just refreshing to see them still going at it and to see them not suffer big injuries, because ultimately we need to see them out on the pitch. And one player who played, I think, maybe he didn't get the plaudits that he maybe deserved on Friday, but Reece Kennedy, and he continues to grow in the Rovers shirt. And most importantly, we're seeing him week in, week out on the pitch.
Yeah. I'm going to just switch back to Elliot Minchella quickly. I've followed Rovers since the Harry Poole days, and he was a great loose forward. We've had some good loose forwards. I think Elliot Minchella would have been a good loose forward at any era, because he's got that presence about him, he's got that body movement about him, and he doesn't take any prisoners. And he if somebody gives him a crack, they're certain to get a crack back in the next 10 minutes, you know. And I rate Elliot Minchella pretty highly in the role of loves forwards that Rovers have had. And that,
well, Steve, as well, okay, well, going back on your knowledge. What I like about Minchella is his soft hands. He glides the ball out to the back, and he creates that little bit of space, that little bit of time, and he does it so effortlessly. And you know, it's goes unnoticed almost. It's only when you watch tries back and you see in the back play actually. So when the ball goes out to the wing and it goes to Michael Lewis, or where it goes to Snyder, and then play that killer pass. Well, actually, that was only derived from Elliot Minchella being able to just shift it gently, almost under the radar. And you know, you've got a greater knowledge of me, Steve, of number 13, but I see him, you know, international honours. I see him going on to, hopefully England will play international games. Bloody hell, that's another debate in itself.
Well, they're playing them this
year. He deserves to play.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, I've seen some discussions talking about, is he the best loose forward in the game? People have mentioned Cameron Smith. Cameron Smith, is not got the silky skills that Minchella's got with the soft hands, with the ball, releasing the ball at the right time and everything. Cameron Smith can tackle, but that's about it as far as I'm concerned. So he doesn't even warrant mentioning. They're talking about Knowles at St. Helens, yeah. But Knowles is, you know, he could get suspended at any time. He could get suspended washing up, you know. with Elliot
talking of soft hands.
Sorry?
Talking of soft hands, that's maybe why he's got him. He's done too much washing up.
Yeah, but... You know, Elliot's to me, Elliot's got the potential. And people might scoff at it. I'm certain Saints fans will, but he's got the potential of being another Paul Sculthorpe or Loughlin or one of those styles of players.
Steve, you're of a generation where I was just a sort of kid when this guy was knocking around, and you'll be better qualified than me to quantify my suggestion here, but I made the call earlier on in the season, and appreciate Elliot's still a young guy learning the trade, etc. But for me, in everything he does, even to the physical stature, very, very reminiscent of Gavin Miller.
Yeah, I looked at that, and he's not quite there yet. Gavin Miller.
No, I appreciate it's early in his career, but all the hallmarks are there.
But he doesn't stop, does he? And no. That was one of Miller's traits. There used to be a player back in the day called Ray Price, who was known as Mr. Perpetual Motion among the Australians. And he, you know, they roam the pitch and they're there and they're backing up and the tackling and the creating gaps. And that's why marauding loose forward. And I think he's as good as, it will be as good as any of them this season, I think. If he just keeps playing the way he is, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Mike Matthews has made a call early doors this, you know, for captain next season for Minchella. I think many people would agree with that.
Yeah, I agree fully. Yeah. I'm a betting man and, you know, he's odds on for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, when you looked at the score, the try scorers on Friday, it's like who's who of row was Jez Litton, Kane Lynette, Ryan Hall 2, Mikey Lewis 2, Lewis Senior, Elliot Minchella, Sean Kenny Dowell. There's some big calls though made by Willie Peters. Of course, Ethan Ryan dropped from the side. Graham Lewis Senior came into the side. It was at fault for one of Lee's tries. He came out from the line a bit too early, and he's still Lewis Senior. He's still got that defensive error in him, hasn't he? But on the flip side, he fitted into the side on the in terms of try scoring, his attacking potential. That right wing though is still not secure, is it? It's still left up to debate, and I suppose that's been one of the, I don't know, big question marks over this Rovers side this season, is that right edge. Tom Opacek, of course, played admirably, maybe one of the standout players for Rovers this season, consistent, you know, Mr. Consistent on that right centre, but the right wing slot still continues to almost elude Rovers in terms of nailing down a regular starter there. And Lewis Senior, I mean, we go into the game against Catalan on Friday. Are you expecting him to retain his place based on the performance against Lee?
I think so, given the fact that he's named the same squad. I don't think, you know, too much will change whatsoever in terms of that. I think, not sure it was him flying out the line. I think it was more, he was tucked in a little bit too close to his centre when he got done with one of those rainbow passes from Lachlan Lamb. And Charlie had a walk in. So, yeah, again, I'm not sure that was a misread or maybe just a minor adjustment that's needed. But for me, Senior is deceptively quick when he's got open field. We know he can go the full length because we've seen that this season and in the World Cup as well. I personally like to see him have a few more kilos on him in terms of upper body weight so he can be stronger in defence. And obviously, he's still a young guy learning the trade as they all are. But just be more tactically aware and technically aware of his defensive duties in and around our own red zone so that he doesn't fall into the trap of getting picked off easily. And he's got two able assistants inside him in Batchelor and Opacek. I think, you know, we've got a great set there. If we can just replicate the left-hand side and as well on the right-hand side, and it just does seem, whether it's Ethan Ryan, whether it's Lewis Senior, it just does seem, not necessarily an Achilles heel position for us, but it does seem a little bit of a soft spot sometimes that we get exposed on.
Can I just say something about that try? Just go back to Wembley and have a look at Briscoe's try at Wembley. Ryan Hall was out of position. Yeah. Ryan Hall had to come inside. He left Briscoe outside, and it was that Hail Mary pass from Lamb that created the try for Briscoe. So it happens to the best. You know, it happens to the best. And I liked him when he was playing for Ireland last year in the World Cup. I took a lot of notice of him. And I think, he's got it. And he just needs, I think, perhaps lacking in a little bit of confidence. But he's got it. And, you know, I'd have him in the team. It will be in the team.
Steve, do you think that confidence has come from a run of games, knowing that he's got the share and can sort of play week in, week out, as opposed to where he's been at the last few weeks, where it's been in for a game, out for a couple, in for a game, out for a couple? You know, it's been not being, I don't know whether it's not trusted or whether there's minor injuries or whatever it's been, but it doesn't seem to have had that consistent run to form those partnerships that are so crucial.
I agree. I fully agree. I think he was unlucky at Wembley. If we hadn't played Mikey, Lewis, at fullback, then Ethan Ryan would have played fullback and he would have been in the Wembley team. And I think that happened to him last year as well when Huddersfield got to Wembley. He was the one that missed out. And I think he's been unlucky there. I think, yeah, he'll be a confidence player. And given the good run in the team, I think it's not really let us down. You know, the effort's there, you know. And, I like him. I like him. And let's give him a run. You're talking about players who've given everything, you know. Do you know this season there's only two clubs that could play in every match of the season? Only two clubs left. Every match available to them. And they're Rovers and Lee. And, you know, if we could get to the grand final, we would have played in every match available to us. I don't think Lee will. I think Lee are busted now. But that's another topic of discussion. And so all those players you were talking about, Kennedy, all the pack, you know, it's a remarkable achievement what they've done. They've played in every match available to them.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Steve, you mentioned Ryan Hall a little bit earlier. I mean, we need to talk about him. Two tries, one try assist, 10 tackle busts, 3 clean breaks, 24 carries, 201 metres, an average gain of 8 metres, 5 offloads. When we played Lee in the Challenge Cup final, I think he made over 270 metres. I had the pleasure of giving Ryan Hall a high five as he walked down the tunnel on Friday night. And you know what? He's a player we're in awe. You just see him, his physical presence, just the look of him. He's a machine. I tell you what a mountain of a man. The fact he's carrying on at this latest stage of his career in terms of his age, etc. But I tell you what a consummate professional, a player who is probably one of the few players in the side who can tell Willie Peters when he plays, where he plays. He's got that ability to do that, and he's shown up for Rovers on so many times this season. I mean, Graham, Ryan Hall, the performance against Lee probably just typified what a professional he is, how much Rovers need him, because I can't think of a player in that side who could replace him in terms of meters made. I mean, he had a great career at Leeds Rhinos, of course, won X amount of trophies, etc. And credit to him now, where he's prolonged his career to the point where he's maybe, probably one of the, if not the best winger in Rovers Super League history. I don't know. Is that too big an accolade to give him?
Well, big accolade, but he's got to be up there certainly in the top three without doubt. And I think he's, you know, he's 35 years of age now, as you say, consummate professional, which goes back to the days of when he was a kid and coming through the Leeds Rhinos Academy, etc. All of that, he looks after himself super well each week. He knows what his body can do and is capable of. He knows how to manage himself, manages his workload. And you know, I think we're seeing week in, week out, such a high level of performance from him. You're right. There isn't anybody else that will step into those shoes and perform as well as that on such a consistent basis that he does. And, you know, for the skill needed to score one or two of the tries that he scored, but not just that, it was the physical strength that he was showing as well in scoring them or being able to offload. He's throwing 17 stone blocks around with one arm, still retaining the ball in the other arm and performing a lovely little delicate, you know, talking about those soft hands up to Lynette for Lynette's try. So for me, the physical presence he brings, not only carrying the ball out of backfield on our exit sets is good, but he showed again why he scored so many Super League tries over his career, or just so many tries in his career, that he's still able to do that now at 35 years of age. And Zach Hardacre got thrown about all over the place on a couple of occasions by Ryan Hall. And he's a big man as well as Zach Hardacre. So to be able to do that and control the ball and you know, all the technical and ability needed to do what he did, absolute professional in what he does. And again, absolutely invaluable to us this season in not just the points scored, but the way he conducts himself, the way he brings others, you know, on with him as well. But importantly, the way he can get us out of our own 20 on a regular basis. And there aren't many teams that can do much about that, which is great for us.
I think one of the joys of that victory over Lee, one of the biggest smiles I had was when he climbed over Hardacre to score that try. Hardacre came in, thought, you know, he was always on a losing battle, wasn't he, Hardacre there? And he just literally threw himself over Hardacre and said, see you later, and touchdown. That was one of the pleasures of that match.
Yeah, and I tell you what, Steve, what was really pleasing as well is if you go back to his first try, where he's got the guile to almost tiptoe his way from the white line. And he's a player who just seems to have every facet of the game that a winger needs. He's got the power, he's got the brawn, but also he's got the finesse, and he's got the, you know, he seems to have everything. And he's irreplaceable. I can't see anyone else out there at the moment who Rovers could bring in, or within the Rovers squad at the moment who could replace him. And I've seen some people say, well, maybe you should move him to the second row. But I remember going to I can't remember whether it was a sponsor's team, and Ryan Hall was adamant he will not go into the second row. He does not like that work. He likes running from deep. He likes being out on the wing. That's his position. And you will never see him at second row.
He's too pretty for the second row, isn't he? He's such a pretty boy as well. He wants to keep those good looks.
Yeah, and who could blame him?
Absolutely.
I'm going to go back again. Sorry, reminiscing. I remember standing in the bar with a guy called Cyril Kelly, who used to play fullback for Rovers, and Johnny Moore. And Cyril went to Featherstone, and they were just having a bit of banter with each other. And Johnny Moore says, oh, you lost a bit of speed, Cyril. And Cyril said, I'm not in the pack, am I? You know, because Johnny Moore was a centre and he ended up playing second row and was forward. And Cyril said to him, well, I might have lost a bit of speed, but I haven't had to go into the pack to keep my place, you know. And Ryan Hall, yeah, I don't think he needs to go in the pack. I think, you know, I think we'll get another good year out of him. Another good year. And I want to see him break the record. The try scoring record, although there's another player looming up in the background that might be into it. He won't now, but Josh Charlie, he's pretty close to Danny Maguire's record as well. But I think he needs 10 tries now. And all things being equal, he could get 3 or 4 in the next 4 games, you know, to get to Danny Maguire.
Yeah.
Which Danny won't
make. I'll tell you what, Steve, if he does, that pretty much for me nails on Rovers finishing the playoffs. If Ryan Hall breaks Danny Maguire's try scoring record in the next few games, I think that pretty much secures Rovers in the playoffs, because that'd be a phenomenal effort. Graham, the slight caveat to Rovers' fantastic performance against Lee was Lee looking very leggy, looking very tired, not necessarily being at their best. And you know, you can't discredit Rovers for their performance, because they can only play the team that's in front of them. You wouldn't say this was a Lee side that we face in the Challenge Cup final.
Essentially, it was the same 1-17, pretty much, but it was the level of performance that was different, I think. And I'm going to give credit to us for adopting a different attitude, a different style of play to Wembley 2 weeks ago, that didn't allow Lee to get on the front foot, that didn't allow Lamb and Reynolds much time on the ball to do what we've seen them do all season. So I want to give us the credit. And look, if Lee are leggy, that's their problem, not ours. We've got to beat what's in front of us. We can't feel sorry for them in any way. We've still got to get those 2 points. However, we did it for our own success on the league ladder, for us to get into those playoff positions. If Lee are now on the slide and that's their bubble pop, then yeah, that's their problem, not ours. I want us to focus on our positives rather than anybody suggesting that it was because Lee were under par. Well, if they were, that's their problem, not ours.
Can
I just say that currently we could be playing Lee again in the playoffs, because at the moment They're on 28 points, so I don't see them getting more than 32 because they've got to play Saints and Wigan. I think the game against Wakefield, they can win. But I don't see them getting more than 32 points. We can get 32. A win tomorrow can set us on target for 32. And I'd like to see us kind of... If we do get 32, I think we'll finish in fourth place, which will give us a home tie against Lee, who will finish in fifth place. That's with us winning all four games.
And I think the biggest thing is, Steve, like you mentioned there, potentially we could meet Lee in the playoffs. And the result on Friday was so important to lay down a marker to say, you know, you are beatable, we can beat you. And I think that's why the result has more gravitas than just the league victory and the 2 points and, of course, the scoreline. But interestingly, Steve, Catalan Dragons, I mean, of all the times to come up with that performance, they did it towards the back end of the season. Wigan Warriors, of course, putting them to the sword on Saturday evening, putting over 30 points past them with no response from the Dragons. It's an interesting time to play them, isn't it? Because on one side, you might say the Dragons are on the slide and this is the best time. The flip side to that is the Dragons are wounded and they want to come back and lay down a marker for the rest of the season. So Friday night, wow, it's going to be a really, really interesting encounter.
We've got to win that forward battle early on. That's what Wigan did. Wigan hit them hard. And, you know, it was a hell of a performance from Wigan. But we've beaten Wigan. We've beaten Wigan. You know, we can... I think the confidence we'll get from that victory last week will stand us in good stead on Friday night. And we know if we go in hard and make them think, my biggest worry is Sam Tompkins will be playing. You know, he's only lost once against Rovers in 24 matches. You know, so we've got to keep him quiet. We've got to keep. I thought Tyrone May had a terrible game last week, but he was playing behind a beaten pack. The week before against Lee, he dominated the game. But last week, he made mistake after mistake. But that's the old adage, your halfbacks can't play behind a beaten pack. So we've got to get on top of their pack early on and say, right, you know, Mr. McAloran, start swinging a few if you want, but we'll swing them back, you know. And that's the way we've got to look on the game, as far as I'm concerned.
Graham, which camp are you in? Is this the best time to play him, or is it possibly the worst time to play him?
Yeah, I think it's probably the worst, as in they're going to be smarting after that. I don't think they've been nilled for umpteen games, especially at home as well. So I think they will have lots of points to prove. I think they'll want to come out on Friday night and set a few records straight. But I agree with Steve that we've got to get on top of them early. And everybody will know that the Catalans are a niggly team to play against. They get in your face. They try and slow things down. They try and play within or just above the line of the letter of the law sometimes. And, you know, if we rise to that, if we bite against that and let them get under our skin, that's when they can exploit that opportunity and then get on top themselves. So I think we've got to resist that and stick to the plan that worked so well on Friday night in terms of getting on top early, the forwards really giving it a good hard yards, as Steve alluded to, that Wigan did. And, you know, 14 sets knocked out back to back give us lots of points before, so we've proved that we can do it. Let us get on top of them early doors. If we don't, then I think then Catalans will grow into that. They'll get some confidence back from being in the game, from being positive. So I think it's got to be, again, as Willie Peters always keeps alluding to, it's what can we do as OKR, and we'll pay respect to the opposition, but we'll not worry too much about what they're doing. We want to control what we're going to do.
Yeah, but you can't take your eyes off the fact, Steve, that Tom Johnston will be playing, and I mean, he's been massive for Catalan, hasn't he, in terms of tries scored, the fact he's not playing, it's huge. But, you know, the problem with Catalan at the moment is it's one player misses out, the next cab off the rank comes in and does really well for him. And you know, there's no doubt they're wounded from that defeat to Wigan. This is maybe a game where the supporters can maybe play a key role in terms of making it an intimidating atmosphere, because there's no doubt if we beat the Lee Leopards, which we did, we beat the Catalan Dragons, that leaves us really handily placed going into them last three games of the season in terms of maybe you can afford a defeat in them last three games. So, I think for the rest of the competition, Steve, it lays down a marker to say, hang on, Old Kingston Rovers, we're here. We've beat Lee, we beat Catalan, we're here.
Yeah, I mean, Johnson's out, but they've got a hell of a strong team out, you know, other than Johnson. And we've got a strong team out as well. We've got our best. We can put apart, I think we can put our best 15 out, apart from Jesse Sill. And so it's going to be a mighty battle. Who gets on top? You know, they've got two great second rows in Whitley and Seguier. Is that how you pronounce
it? Yeah, go on. Yeah,
their centres, Kieran and Laguerre. I mean, Adam Kieran, Wigan are going to have a hell of a player there next year. He's signed for Wigan next year. Great centre, and he's punished us this season a couple of times. But, you know, we haven't beaten them since 2018, but statistics are there. This is the next match, and stats and performances of the past are forgotten. So I think, and like you say, Jono, the crowd have got to be like the French crowd. They've got to be vicious in the support of Rovers, you know, make Catalans uncomfortable. Because I know that McNamara doesn't like coming to Craven Park. He's said it time and time again. So I think if we can get on top early, score a couple of tries early, I think we can win.
Yeah, I mean, Graham, it's been so long since we beat Catalan, hasn't it? And to be fair, in that time, I think, what was it, 2019, the last time we beat them? In that time, we've ran them close on a number of occasions. You know, there's been so many occasions where we probably should have beat them, but for whatever reason, we haven't. This would be a statement victory, I think, if we did beat them in the run-up to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think I read something earlier on. You know, look, we've come out short on close on a few occasions, but we've also been blown out by them as well. So it's been some, you know, hard times against Catalan over the last 4 or 5 years, no doubt, but I think there's Catalan and Warrington are the only two teams that we haven't beat this season. The rest of the teams in there we've knocked over. So again, you know, Steve alludes to stats and history, etc. This is another opportunity to write one of those statistics in one of the teams that we haven't beaten. But yeah, no doubt it's going to be tough. And I think again, I've said this a couple of times on the podcast this season, is the crowd are a massive part to play in this one. We saw that, you know, we've seen many a time what good noise can bring at Craven Park. And look, we ain't going to get outsung on Friday night by the away support. There's absolutely no doubt about that. So there's nothing to bounce off against there. So it has to be, again, up to the crowd itself to generate that atmosphere. Make it, you know, the noisier it is when they have the ball, the more difficult it is for them to communicate with each other. Let's do everything we can within our powers to give our, you know, our side the advantage in that. And it can. Steve mentioned the word vicious there. I think every time that teams go over there, they recognise that it's a hostile atmosphere when you go to Catalans, and we've got to turn that round to our advantage to make it hostile in our favour and really try and put them off their stride as much as we can.
Yeah, and it's retro round, Steve. On Friday, they've reduced ticket prices. Dr. Jive is going to be performing. Lots of festivities going on. I think we're playing our Queensland shirt on Friday, which we've not won in this season. Just a a little mention there. But it's not the shirt that wins the game, is it? It's the players that play in the shirt. So we'll see what happens on Friday. Steve, a little side note, Josh Hodgson, of course, former Robin, he announced his retirement from rugby league early today. 134 games in the red and white of Hulkington Rovers, scored 35 tries. I mean, he was a phenomenal player, wasn't he? And if ever there was a player from Hulkington Rovers who was going to go on and have a career in the NRL, maybe not at the time, you know, but I mean, what a career he's made for himself. And such a shame that any player has to retire through injury. And, you know, he didn't have the choice to retire. Basically, he was forced to. But when you look back at them years, I mean, God, it's a while ago now, when it Josh Hodgson lining up for all Kingston Rovers, some fantastic memories. And what a star performer he was.
Yeah, I mean, I've got him in my top three Rovers hookers, with Flash, Peter Flanagan, and David Watkinson.
Wow.
Those two were old school. They had to strike for the ball in the pack. Josh hasn't had to do that in the same way, but I think he would have been able to. I think all three players would have been good in this era, Flash, Watkey and Josh. So it's very difficult to split them. Flash was always one of my favourites as a kid. I knew him. I lived down the same street as him. And but he had to fight to get into the Rovers team. So with Josh, do you know one of my favourite memories of Josh was he hadn't signed for Rovers. He was playing for Hull A against Rovers A in a reserve grade game. And I think the score was 32-30 to Rovers. Hull crossed the line in the last minute to make it 32-30. That made them 30. They needed to kick the goal from touch. And who took the kick but Josh Hodgson? I remember standing near the exit to the well, and you could hear the Rovers reserve team shouting across him, come on, you know, behind the line. Come on, Josh, you can kick this. Don't worry about it, Josh, you can kick it. This was the Rovers team trying to put him off, and he duly missed it, and Rovers won the game. And then I think that was the last match of a season, and I think the next season was when Josh signed for Rovers. And what a signing. You know, he never put a foot wrong for Rovers as far as I was concerned. I was sad when he decided to go to Australia, because he wore the colours with pride, with energy, with exuberance. And we made him, as you know, because Hull didn't give him a chance in Super League. So therefore, it was his experience with Rovers that led him to take the next step in Australia. And I followed Canberra all the time he was there. And he played in, you know, he was instrumental in Canberra getting to the grand final. And I loved him over there. And it's just so sad that we've had one this year, you know, in Colt. That it's an injury that's ended his career, really. But I do know he's loved over there, and he'll always be loved at Croydon Park.
Yeah, fantastic tribute, Steve. That's one player, Graham, who'll never wear, sadly, the red and white Hulkington Rovers again. One player who probably is in the same boat now is Jack Walker, of course. Willie Peters earlier this week announced that he has no future at Craven Park beyond the current season. Of course, he performed so well against Lee last time out on Friday. Fantastic performance in fullback. Is he a player you'd like to see at Hulkington Rovers next season? Or one criticism of Rovers supporters is that one player plays well and all of a sudden we need to sign him up. We saw it with Zenon when we signed him on loan from Catalan. And then we saw his next performance and he was probably chalk and cheese. I think Jack Walker, there's a player there. I probably support Willie Peters in his decision not to retain him, because I just think who our recruits are for next season will get in front of him. And we can't romanticise the fact a player has a couple of decent games and then all of a sudden we need to offer him a contract. And it's sad, but I suppose that was the deal offered to Jack when he signed him. And and we will wish him, you know, well. But there's definitely a player in there, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think if people haven't listened to the pre-match presser that Willie Peters did, he explains the rationale behind the Jack Walker decision. So it was decided, you know, early doors that was going to be the case. It was only ever going to be till the end of the season to see us through a difficult period without recognised cover at fullback. I think from Jack Walker's perspective, it worked out really well in that he was going to get exposure in the shop window, as it were, playing Super League to earn himself another contract elsewhere in a sort of 3-month period, for example. So I think it worked, you know, it was a win-win for everybody. So yeah, again, we've all been guilty of recognising good performances and saying, look, sign him up. And yeah, there is definitely a player there. I'm not 100% sure that we would be any better with Jack Walker in our squad than our acquisitions for next season, and the way that Peters has got it lined up in terms of that team sheet come, you know, February 2024, for example. But yeah, it was a piece of business that suited us at the time. It suited Jack Walker at the time as well, but it was only ever going to be that. And, you know, that was something that Willie Peters made clear in that press conference this week, that it was the best for all parties at that time. And, you know, everybody's clear and everybody understands what the deal was and is. And, you know, hopefully Jack will earn himself that contract and that people feel he deserves as a Super League player.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, Steve, Old Kingston Rovers are going to have some players getting representative honours. Congratulations to the Hull KR women players, Lois Brown, Aliyah Brewster and Carla Nolan, who have been named in the England Community Lions Rugby League squad. They are travelling to Belgrade in October to face the Serbian women's national side in 2 tests. I mean, the women's side have been going great guns this season. I think they're currently top of their league. The coach is there. They've done a fantastic job and they deserve the recognition they get. And to see any player in Hull Kingston Rovers shirt, male, female, youngster, part of the disability setup, whoever, to get international honours is fantastic. And we also saw Connor Lyons being named vice captain of the England PDRL side as well. We can't forget these people. They are part of the club. They're on an equal footing with any single player who plays in the men's side, and they deserve the recognition. And I'd love to give more coverage of them because they deserve it. Great raps to the women's side. Great raps to these players who are going to Belgrade. I mean, that is going to be a fantastic experience, not only playing rugby league in another country, but travelling to Belgrade and experiencing the culture, lifestyle, blah, 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 all that. Well deserved.
In my lifetime, we've gone from watching, you know, Rovers play single league games. Never dreamed back then of having a women's team. I never dreamed back then of having an international in Belgrade. You know, the game's come on so much, and it's good that Rovers are having some Rovers players are having their skills acknowledged that they can represent England in Belgrade. And it's a fantastic achievement. I think one of the girls just missed out on training with England last year for the World Cup. I'm not saying she'd have got in the team, but there was a chance she could have made a squad. And Connor, you know, we know what he's been through. You know, he's done marvellous. I think really, it's amazing the way the game has evolved, the way that we've allowed the girls to come in. And they've done it quietly, as far as I'm concerned. They did it, you know, I never noticed them at the beginning. But by God, they've managed to raise the heights of their game to the extent of getting international honours. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and Graham, we'll finish on this. It's a negative, but let's hope we can turn it into a positive. The abuse of match officials. We saw what happened with Marcus Griffiths receiving personal messages about his sexuality, blah, 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 threats, all that kind of nonsense based on the fact that he didn't give certain decisions in the rugby league rugby league game. Kind of nonsense, isn't it? I suppose we've all got a part to play in this. It's easy to point the finger at an anonymous Instagram, Twitter account, whatever it is. But I suppose we all have a role to play in terms of when you're in the stands at a rugby league game and what you say and what you do. That manifests itself beyond the rugby league game, doesn't it? And it's sad to see a match official receiving abuse like he did. I know that's a minority of not rugby league people, but society as well as a whole. I think we can't forget that. But we've all got a role to play in making sure that match officials are not abused and they're not receiving abuse to the extent where people wishing that they die and all this kind of stuff. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's completely unacceptable, Jono. It's mindless idiots who are hidden behind keyboards. And, you know, we're just talking about the inclusivity of the game there and, you know, the way that the female game has grown and the PDRL team have had success. And that is just part of the inclusivity of the sport of rugby league. And you know, that there's absolutely no place in rugby league or society, in modern society, for the sort of behaviours and abuse that Marcus received. Look, we all get frustrated sometimes with decisions that don't go against us, but you make your point on within the game, you forget about it, you move on, and you're sort of looking at your next play. For anybody to hide behind a keyboard or and you know, deliver that type of vile abuse to somebody on such a threatening level, it's you know, it's a hate crime. It's punishable by law. The shame in lots of things are that this has got more attention, quite rightly, that this has got more attention from a negative perspective than all the positive, fantastic work that goes on in rugby clubs up and down the country, whether it be at first team level, at community level, at the women, the PDRL stuff. All of that gets coverage, but it just one mindless idiot who's decided to jump behind a keyboard and fire off this as you know. Thankfully, it's reignited a debate that's already out there in society, but it's generated so much support from the rugby league community about how unacceptable that type of behaviour is. And again, you're right. If we can see it in the grounds and hear it in the grounds, then yes, we should call it out in this day and age as completely unacceptable and report it through the channels. The real frustrating piece on this is that this was an anonymous account that was created and has since been deleted. So what are the chances of anybody being punished or held to account on this? How much time and effort is going to go into investigating that to try and find somebody? Is it, you know, is there ever going to be a prosecution on the back of that? Because that person, whoever's done that, could effectively just go and create a new account, set up a new address, and then do the same next week to somebody else. And again, the cycle could repeat. And nobody knows about that. Only that individual, you know, is aware of that. So it's very, very hard to police that. And again, you're right. It's mindless individual idiots that are not reflective of clubs in general, society in general. These are mindless idiots who need, you know, naming and shaming. If we've got the opportunity to do so, they need to feel the, you know, the full force of the law that's available to punish them for that. And yeah, we want our sport to be inclusive, a safe environment for families, children to come along and enjoy. And certainly, look, we all get frustrated with things within it, but it should stay there at the final whistle. We dust ourselves off, we have a chunter about it on the way home, we go for a beer, we forget about it, and then we turn up next week and, you know, we support the team again. That's how it should be. It's unfortunate that some mindless idiots are spoiling it for, you know, for the majority.
Can I just say, it was exacerbated by a journalist as well. There was a journalist out there who made some comments purportedly asking questions. I've been a journalist for most of my life, and this guy was after clicks. No doubt about it in my mind, he was after clicks. And he was asking questions of people, trying to get them to bite on what was said. and he was way out of order as far as I'm concerned. I'm not going to name him, but we all know the group he works for. And I found that sad. I found it sad, and he's justifying it by saying he's a journalist. Well, I'll tell you what, as a journalist, he would not have got a job with me as his editor. You know, it's as simple as that. We don't need that. And the other thing we don't need, and Graham, well, you both know, if a referee makes a bad decision, we don't want a crowd of supporters chanting, cheat, 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 because it's just going to wind him up, or calling him, you know, a W wanker. You know, we don't need that. Let's just support our teams. And, you know, all my life I've called referees. Good grief, but referees don't cheat. And I have refereed, by the way, so I know what it's like at the amateur level. Referees don't cheat. You don't go into a game and say this team's good. Because if there was any doubt about referees cheating, you wouldn't have referees from the same town as a team that's playing. You know, referees see things that we don't see. I've got my favourites, and I've got one guy who my heart just sinks whenever I see he's refereeing Rovers. But I don't think it's because he's cheating against Rovers. I think it's because I think he's a poor referee for both teams. You know, so let's leave these referees alone, because I'll tell you what, without them, we've no game. Simple as that.
Especially next season when we're supposed to have a video referee at every single game.
Every game's going to be televised by Sky. Every game. Yeah.
And I think lastly as well, Graham, I mean, I think match officials, professional match referees, you know, linesmen, they accept there's an almost pantomime-esque level of criticism that's levelled at them. You know, you see it at Rovers when they run out down the east stand and they're booed, and you see the smile. There is a level of, I don't know, banter, criticism that match officials will accept and supporters should accept. That's the line. What we've seen increasingly over the last couple of years, though, is that line gets pushed further and further by some people to the point where it's not banter, it's not jovial, it's not funny, it's abuse. And unfortunately, it's not the ones who are prepared to put the face to it. It's the ones who hide behind, you know, a faceless account, etc., etc. And hopefully, you know, as supporters, we can do a job in the stadiums by calling people out, by not joining chants, by not, joining in any abuse that might be going on. That is what you can do as an individual. You're not going to, you know, let's be honest, us as individuals aren't going to save the world, but we can play our part in stopping, hopefully, something. And especially in a game where it prides itself on being a family sport, remember the actions, the words you say. If you're stood around young people and you're taking young people, don't forget they're the supporters in the next 10, 20, 30 years. And if they see you perpetrating that behaviour, well, don't be surprised if they copy you. So we've all got an example to make.
Yeah, there's plenty of examples out there, Jonah. Yeah, I think, you know, it goes back to standards, obviously, of what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. And yeah, there is that pantomime element of it, which is, you know, it's laughed off and, you know, that's okay. Look, as a fan, you pay your money, you're entitled to an opinion. But, you know, there's lines that definitely shouldn't be crossed. And especially when you sort of get into the depths of what was being suggested to Griffiths from that unnamed person. But again, I just sort of use the example of if people give this a thought around when they're at work, whatever line of work they're doing, they make an error. You know, what happens there? Do people stand over them, call them every name under the sun, or not? Is it, you know, because these people, the players, the referees, are at work. They're doing their work. They're doing it to the best of their abilities. They're human first and foremost. They are going to make mistakes. They're not robotic. They're not going to be perfect in everything they do. So we have to accept that that's part of the game. You know, over a course of a season, we'll get some decisions that go for us. We'll get some decisions that go against us. But in the whole, over a course of a season, they will pretty much every single time even themselves out. You only tend to remember the ones that have gone against you, and you sometimes quite conveniently forget the ones that have gone for you and in your favour. But over the course of a season, looking objectively, there will be no pattern to you know, referees favouring or not your particular team. Don't buy into that at all. So we've got to be mindful of it. It's part of the game, that the noise and everything, the oohs, the ahs, the pantomime, as you called it, Jono. So that's, you know, everybody accepts that that's part of the game, but there's definite lines that should not be crossed. And again, it's cowardly if somebody's prepared to hide behind a keyboard and fire off that vitriol that was posted online by Griffiths this week. Then nobody wants that sort of type of person in the game. But it's how do we eradicate that person when they're sat behind a keyboard? They may remain anonymous throughout the game and then just fire off as soon as they get back on their laptop. They might be the model employee at work, but all of a sudden turn into a complete animal when they're at the 80 minutes of rugby. How can we eradicate that person from the game? And that's the hardest bit for me, because society has changed massively over the last generation for the better, obviously. And there's just mindless idiots, as you said, Jono, that tarnish the good names of clubs or the sport in general, that get a lot of airtime that we can't punish and eradicate and use the force of the law in this particular occasion for a hate crime.
Yeah, and it's a good job, Graham, that people don't stand over you and critique you for your work through errors that you make. Otherwise, you'd probably never work again on that basis. But
thanks for that vote of confidence, John. I appreciate that.
I'm only joking. But no, it's a serious point and it is worth talking about. And hopefully we won't see anything untowards happening at Craven Park on Friday night as the Red Robins head into a crucial game in terms of the playoff chase this Friday. This has been the Red Robin Podcast Weekly, powered by Budget Size Auto Centre, the only car specialist trusted by club officials, players and supporters of Hull Kingston Rovers. But for now, live, love, laugh and be happy.